Joining us on the line, Jake Shepherd. He's a director and founder at Synthesis. A very, very good morning to you, Jake. How are you? Have you been running this morning?
Morning, Howard. Actually, I must admit, I skipped my run this morning, so I'm looking to do it a bit later, maybe.
Indoors, then?
For sure. You never know. I can get daring, you know, and go out.
No, we do not encourage that sort of rule breaking. Wow. Next thing, you're going to take up cigarette smoking.
Illegal cigarette smoking.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have this conversation with you, because we all need people that we look up to. I've never been one to actually have any heroes. It's one of the difficult questions when anyone's asked me, like in an interview in a book, like, who's your hero? I'm thinking, oof, I don't really have any. So I'm not great at that. But of course, they're people that I admire greatly. You, I'd love to hear from you. You've got three people that, that you admire tremendously. And what I love about it is it's quite diverse. So, take us through who they are and why.
Yeah, so I think what would be great is just to like really look at what I've learned from my heroes over the years. And I think just to kick it off, like, why have heroes in the first place? I mean, you've alluded to it, but I think it's really important because you look up to certain people and you're drawn to that. You're drawn to emulate what they do and who they are. And essentially, like, I suppose when earlier on in life, we our parents are heroes in many respects. And we look at them and they can't do any wrong. I mean, I look longingly back at that when my kids were younger and they looked at me that way. I think these days they're my harshest critics.
For sure. For sure.
And then also if you look at like in terms of our biblical heroes, people like Abraham, we learn things like hospitality from Abraham, or we learn like humility from Moshe Rabbeinu and Moses. So there's a lot that can be learned by just having heroes and looking up to them. And I think the things that they tend to do is they tend to sacrifice themselves for the journey. They have a mission, and the mission comes before everything else. And I think that's what really draws us to them. And then they seem to have a way of overcoming tremendous obstacles in life. And I think for me, my personal heroes are people, A, that have lived while I've been alive, you know, not necessarily having to look back so far in history, but people that have been around, and they've inspired me, and I think to a large extent, they've provided me with a deeper understanding of myself and of life. And one of my personal heroes is Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik. So he, American Orthodox rabbi, he lived, I think he was born in 1903 and he passed away in 1993. And he's a Talmudist, he's a modern Jewish philosopher, like the head of the modern Orthodox Jewish world in America for many years. And one of the things I really like about Rav Soloveitchik, often called the Rav, is because he uses incredibly complex language. And it's actually, I always find that it's best to read some of his books with a big dictionary next to you. A concise dictionary ain't going to cut it.
Right.
So you have a nice big dictionary next to you.
And he wrote in English.
Wrote in English. Mm-hmm. He wrote in Hebrew as well, but a lot of his works are in English, but they're very, very difficult. Just, he uses difficult language, but his concepts are profound. And what I like about that is he actually expects, it's almost as if he's expecting you to be at his level. And then
that.
you're inspired to get to that level so that you can actually sit at the table, so to speak, with the Rav.
Yes.
And I think for me, one of the most important lessons I learned is from his book, The Lowly Man of Faith. For many years, I was actually quite critical of anybody who didn't think exactly the way I did. And I'm sure I'm not the only person who falls into that trap.
No, but you're probably one of the few who admit it.
Okay. And his book, The Lonely Man of Faith, he points out he talks about in the Genesis narrative, there are two narratives for the creation of man in Genesis 1 and in Genesis 2. And in the first narrative, man and woman are created together. And in the second one, which seems to have captured everyone's imagination, is man is created first and then Adam is created first and then Eve is created from one of his ribs. And, but effectively, so what the Rav points out is really those two narratives correspond with two duties or two missions that we have in our life. And the one he calls the majestic man mission, or you have to become a majestic man, you have to have dignity, you have to conquer disease, you have to fly to the moon, you know, because I think he was writing this at a time where there was becoming a potential possibility, an aspiration. But then he said you also have to be a covenantal man, a spiritual man, a man who has a relationship with his maker. And both of those are godly missions. And what that did for me is it turned my mind around from not that there's one way of living, you know, one way of truth. It's actually recognizing in others those things that they are doing that are godly. And they don't have to, in other words, there are many missions in life that we are, let's say, required by God to live up to. And what you could start doing is what I started doing is started recognizing other people, the mission that they were on, and actually having a tremendous appreciation for their mission. And it might not have been my mission, but I could see the godliness in their
mission. In others. So, yeah, that's incredible. In what a great lesson that is.
Yeah, so for me, that Ralph Soloveitchik really epitomized that. And it helped me grow beyond, I suppose, my limited understanding of people and what we're trying to achieve in life.
From a tolerance perspective, very interesting.
In tolerance perspective, it changed me totally.
Yes, yes.
So for me, that's Soloveitchik.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's number one. Who else?
He's number one. So my second hero is a famous physicist by the name of Richard Feynman. And he was born in 1918 and he passed away sadly from cancer in 1988. He was a maverick and a real character. He's an American theoretical physicist. He did a lot of really, really complex stuff. He won a Nobel Prize for his theory of quantum electrodynamics, which he shared with two other physicists. But I think what was iconic about him is that he was just very, very way out there. And he was very you could relate to him. Like you typically think of physicists as these super intelligent people that like are always lost in their thoughts, like an Einstein type concept. And he was the guy going to strip clubs and playing bongo drums. I mean, he was a real, real interesting.
But it wasn't because of the strip clubs that you admired him, obviously.
I love a multifaceted person.
But I do as well. That's the truth is I do as well. It's very interesting because my grandparents were very religious, but they lived a bit of a dichotomy. So because of that, I learned from a young age that you could be religious but have a great sense of humor, and you could be religious but and my grandmother used to love going to the casino and gamble and smoke in secret, and these were the things that creates interesting and whole people, I think.
For sure. And I think that's something to realize is, and it's something that I've realized from my heroes is the importance of creating wholeness. So I love that. Well, I love that you've said that because wholeness for me is like it's a goal to try and attain, to try and make yourself rounded with many, many different facets all coming together to create a complete whole. When I first learned about Richard Feynman, it was from two of his books. Surely you're joking, Mr. Feynman. And what do you care about what other people think? And what they did is they're like autobiographical in the sense that they were anecdotal stories from his life, but it just showed the prankster and the joker in him. Like he was involved in the Manhattan Project, which was the development of the atomic bomb. And actually, he was one of the people that I think the rest of the military was really worried about from a point of view that he used to go around cracking everybody's safes. Like they had these special combination locks and he would go around cracking everybody's combination locks. He'd like visit somebody and he'd play with their combination locks and he worked out a way of feeling where the numbers were. And eventually he knew every single padlock in the place and he could open up any drawer. That sort of a thing. I mean, he actually went into tremendous depression after the bombs were dropped.
He does sound like somebody that would have potential or to be at risk for suffering from depression. Yeah.
And what he said is, like, before, like, the reason he got into the atomic bomb is because at the time, Germany was way ahead of the United States in developing the atomic weapon. Mm. And he realized that the only way that he could protect the free world was to help get there first. And he said his biggest regret in his life was that when Germany dropped out of the war, he didn't re-examine his decision to continue working on the bomb. And basically, because his original premise for working on it actually fell away. And really, then the fact that it was then used against Japan put him into total and utter depression for many, many years, actually. It took him a long time to come out of the depression. But one of the things that I really, is an anecdotal story he told about his first wife, Arlene Greenbaum, that he met actually before, he got married to before the war. But she had TB, and in those days there was no cure for TB.
Yeah.
So it was terminal. And it's very catchy. And his parents were dead set against him marrying Arlene, who was like his childhood sweetheart. And he said to his parents something that stuck with me. And he said, I'd rather have a few years with somebody I love than no time with her at all.
Amazing.
So it's like really, yeah.
That's a real romantic, isn't it?
Yeah, a romantic guy. But he ran away from honor. I don't know. I've never ever seen anybody, in terms of when I read through his collection of letters, who was so intent about running away from any form of honor. It's amazing to see, because he said the value of any person, or the value that a person brings, is that what they do is of use to others. And he said that's your reward. And he hated this concept of epitaphs. And people being given, let's say, like looked up to because of the position that they hold, like an unearned sort of position. Mm. He felt that the only position that a person should ever have is a position of saying that they're doing, that the fact that they've done something that other people find useful, that's it. And that's all you need in life. So I like that for me. I found him to be a tremendously inspiring person. So that's... And then my last hero, is the only hero I've actually ever met in person. My other two heroes, unfortunately, I never managed to ever meet. But my last hero I have met, and he's Jordan Peterson. So he's a...
How is he? Because I believe he has not been well at all. In fact, and we haven't heard from him for a while.
Yeah, so... Basically what happened was, he's somebody who suffered from depression his entire life. It actually runs through his family. And what happens is his wife then got tremendously ill. She was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and thank God today she's actually, I think she's in remission.
Nice.
But she overcame that fight. But during that fight, he actually, the anxiety was crippling him. And I think he went on to higher dosages of benzodiazepine. And what actually happened is then after she got well, he tried to get off it. And all sorts of complications happened. And as far as I understand, he went into like a coma as well as part of the whole withdrawal. And he went for some severe treatment. The only place they could do it was in Russia. It was really, really touch and go. But the last I heard is that from his daughter, is that he's recovering slowly, and he's actually finishing his third book, which is great.
Oh, absolutely wonderful. Because his, the 12 rules is...
12 rules for life.
Yeah. Is one of the most powerful books I've ever read, certainly.
Yeah. No, 100%. And really, so what I learned from Jordan Peterson, is really the whole concept of being a teacher and not a debater. So what I've found amazing, whenever you look at him being interviewed or discussing topics with people, he never debates. It's not ever about trying to win the argument. It's always about trying to teach and trying to create understanding. And for me, it's changed my way of interacting with people. In other words, always try and teach. It's not about trying to win an argument. And that for me is one aspect that's profound.
That's amazing.
The other aspect that I found amazing about him is the whole concept of truth and truth being everything. In other words, one of his rules in the 12 rules for life is tell the truth or at least don't lie. Huh. And I think what he's trying to give across in that is that what the Western world has discovered is maybe the way that we become as great as we can be is just by always telling the truth, being truthful to ourselves, but just being truthful about everything in life. And that's like, it's something that really creates greatness in many respects. And the other thing is he's inspired me to recognize the infinite potential in each of us. And it's something that he actually just says he thinks there's no limit to any one person and what they can achieve. And if they take on responsibility and every single decision they make is a decision that actually grows them and doesn't diminish them in any way, and they make that decision time and time again each and every day, and they just try and take on as much responsibility as they can bear. So they might start off by just growing themselves, but then they can start growing their family and being a support for their family. I think the one thing he mentioned is you need to be the person that everyone can lean on at your father's funeral. In other words, that whole concept of being the rock, being the stability in your
amazing
family.
Idea. Mm,
And then he says, once you've done that, you can then, maybe you can actually start uplifting people in your community.
Amazing.
And then you can start, in other words, it's all about, but you have to start by growing yourself. And he says, but we don't actually understand what the limits are of a person when they take on a burden of responsibility and they wear that burden and they struggle with it and they just, and they make all the right decisions and every single decision matters. So that's a tough thing to take on board, is that many people feel that they'd actually, you know, I suppose that the world is like nihilistic. There's no purpose. There's no meaning to it. And he says that's actually a bit of a cop out because, well, then you're not requiring anything of them. But the opposite of that is that everything you do matters. And he says that's scary as well. When you realize that absolutely everything you do matters and has a consequence. But if you do that and you take that on board, you can become, you know, there's no limit to what you can become.
Yeah, and I love
and
his, I love the when he speaks about people's trying to change the world and he says, well, have you made your bed? You know, start off by, start off there, start off by fixing your, obviously it being a bit of a metaphor, but yet in some ways it actually isn't. Just to, you know, get your own stuff in order and then go and change the world after that.
Yeah. And he talks about the fact that, in terms of sorting out your own stuff, he says a lot of young kids or students at university are told to be activists and you're going to go out and change the world. And he says, well, you know, the world's complex. These are structures that have been put together over like generations and thousands of years. And it's, if you think you're going to just go out there and change it and whatever you do is just going to be for the better, it's going to turn out fantastically.
Mm.
He says, it's like a monkey taking a wrench to an Apache helicopter. And thinking, oh, I'm going to fix this Apache helicopter, take the wrench, whack, whack, whack.
Amazing.
You know, now the helicopter's going to work.
Right.
He says, how much of an imbecile are you?
Yeah, he's quite,
you don't understand it.
Quite courageous in how he speaks.
Exactly. And he says, listen, start off by fixing your own life. That's tough enough. And when you've sorted that out and you've sorted out your family and you've sorted out your community, Then you can set your sights higher, but do it slowly and do it carefully because there are so many unintended consequences when we just take a wrench and start whacking stuff, hoping that it gets better.
Absolutely, absolutely unbelievable. Very, very interesting. Jake Shepherd, unfortunately, we do need to leave it there. Really, really interesting listening to you hearing about three people who you admire and who you have learned from. I'd love to hear from you, 34519 or 061-895-1019, if you have people that have made a big difference to your life. Jake Shepherd, thank you as always. Have a Shabbat Shalom.